75% of Americans believe in UFOs. 30% of Americans believe UFOs are vehicles from other worlds. And 3% of Americans believe they have been abducted by aliens. That's over 8 million people. They're out there, aren't they?
Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
On the line from Washington, D.C., we have Dr. Michael Isawa. He's an expert in exopolitics. In fact, Dr. Isawa has a book about the subject, and we'll give you the name of the book here in a moment, and we'll get into that. But first of all, Dr. Isawa, welcome to the show. Well, it's always a pleasure, and I know your field is coming up this weekend with our good friend Stephen Bassett. He's got a whole conference kind of slated toward what you specialize in.
That's right, yes. It's a real synchronicity there. I mean, he did come up with this conference independently of my book, but it was quite amazing when we realized that both of us had put together initiatives.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what you plan to do at this conference, first of all, Dr.
Sure, well, I'm basically going to just outline what exopolitics is all about. I mean, people aren't quite sure about exactly what exopolitics is because it's a new field, so there really is going to be a need to just describe how this is a particular academic field with its own kind of approach that uses various methodologies and frameworks and conceptual approaches that makes it something that's worth studying. So it really is going to be important to just really make it clear that, well, this is something worth studying, that it's not just conspiracy theory or people kind of indulging in this kind of free-willing exposition of ideas about what the cover-up is all about and what ET is all about. It's looking at the whole phenomenon in the way in which you would typically do with any particular branch of politics. But what makes this unique is that it's going to be focused on the extraterrestrial presence.
Well, Dr. Michael Isawa is our guest, and the book is Exopolitics, The Political Ramifications of Extraterrestrials. And we're talking about the X Conference this weekend, which evidently is going to have a good turnout. So you're actually going to get into this a little bit. And we want to talk a little bit about the political ramifications of this. And, of course, when you talk about that, Dr. Isawa, you talk about, or at least I think about immediately, disclosure. And I don't know if any progress is being made in that area or not. It doesn't seem like it.
Well, it's a very interesting area. I mean, the X Conference itself is a very significant event. I mean, the fact that Steve Bassett has been able to put it together, and seems that he hasn't had too many obstacles put in his way. It looks as though it's going to be well attended with a lot of support. He has an excellent co-moderator, Phil Jones, who is very prominent in the mainstream media, so that looks as though that will be a real bonus that will bring in a lot of interest. There have been a number of events throughout the year suggesting that disclosure is something that is getting a lot more serious attention. I heard Stephen talk about that, the administration wanting to cast the best possible light on the suppression of that information and coming up with a disclosure initiative that would really try to enhance the status of the Bush administration.
I guess, really, if you stop and think about it, Dr. Isawa, the time may be ripe in a way, simply because several generations have passed, and politicians, being what they are, can point the finger at other people who are long gone and don't have to defend themselves.
Well, that's true, yes. It really is a matter of pointing out that these decisions were made long ago. The Truman and the Eisenhower administration really set the framework for the whole apparatus and the infrastructure that supports the various ET projects and the cover-up. So the current administration just has to point to those decisions taken under previous administrations. I mean, Truman was a Democrat and Eisenhower was a Republican, so it's not a matter of, you know, one particular party being more guilty than the other. I mean, they were both in on it from the beginning and both played prominent roles. I think the real debate is not so much when disclosure is going to happen, but I think it's how. It's the question of, what spin are they going to put on it? What way are they going to be able to present disclosure that enables them to really give least information to the general public? I think that's what they want to do. They want to put together a disclosure initiative, which means that they can say, yeah, here's the information on the extraterrestrial presence. But in doing so, they want to ensure that the public reaction is such that they don't have to divulge too much else.
I kind of agree with you on that, Dr. Sal. In fact, I've always thought the disclosure probably would be done much like many other political decisions. There'd be a leak here and a leak there, and it gradually leak out, and the public would be kind of prepared for it through various stories in the media, and then finally somebody in charge would say, yeah, that's true, and try to go on to something else.
Yes, I think that would be their main concern. I think what they want to do is to maintain as much of the national security infrastructure that's been created over the last 50 years dealing with ET without having Congress, without having the general public pry into that too much. The last thing they want is to have Congress and the general public saying, well, what are these different projects that we hear about? What is this black budget funding all of this? What are the different extraterrestrial groups that you've been involved with over the decades? I mean, I think the managers of the extraterrestrial presence don't want that information to be disclosed in any way that would harm their current projects. So I think they would really manage the whole disclosure process in a very tight way, as you described, leaking a bit here, a bit there, and then trying to get the public to move on to other issues once they've admitted that, yes, well, ETs are here, but now the big issue is, I'll tell us what it is.
Yeah, right. That's right. And once you let, to use an old phrase, the cat out of the bag, people are going to want to know all about it. Your book is published by Dandelion Books and is available most places, and we have a link on our website for people to get it as well. And when I read the title, I left out the last word, extraterrestrial presence, which is actually part of the subtitle, and pretty important, really. Because we are talking about managers of the extraterrestrial presence. Are we talking about earthbound managers, or are we talking about the extraterrestrials managing things themselves?
Well, that's a great question. We're definitely looking at the earthbound managers. I mean, people within the national security system that have made the key decisions. I mean, those are the ones that I focus on, simply because those are the ones we have most reliable evidence about. I mean, there have been a lot of whistleblowers coming forward, talking a little bit about what's been happening. And, I mean, there have been enough of them coming forward to do this that after a while you get to see a pattern, you get to see a large puzzle, and as every whistleblower comes forth, they give their little bit, and as you start piecing together all these little bits of information, you get an idea of the way in which the whole system is run. It's like, I think it's like any kind of investigation process. I mean, if you look, whether it's a journalistic investigation or criminal investigation, if you investigate it, goes in there appreciating that they're not going to get the whole thing up front. They're going to have to rely on getting bits and pieces of information from different sources and piecing all this together. That's the kind of talent that the investigator has, piecing it all together. And then you have a coherent picture, and then you make your case.
Well, you've got a good point there. As years of doing investigative reporting on many issues, you're absolutely right. And when it comes to whistleblowers, unfortunately, I think the powers that be are being blown, in other words, the people are being told about, they seem to have developed over the years a pretty good way of handling these whistleblowers. In other words, it makes headlines for a few days and then it all goes away.
Definitely. I think they've succeeded very well in terms of ensuring that these whistleblower testimonies don't get into the mainstream. And so far as we know, the whistleblowers really don't have an impact as far as the mainstream media is concerned. But they do have an impact in the alternative media. I mean, their stories are distributed, records are kept, and over time, there's extensive databases created for these different whistleblowers. And so it means that those doing the investigative reporting or doing the analysis of the extraterrestrial presence can look at all of these different whistleblower testimonies and see what it is that they said, you know, what piece of the puzzle that they cast light on. So you get the big picture emerging. So even though the mainstream media has kind of like ignored most of this or virtually all of it, you nevertheless have these whistleblower testimonies being recorded, being distributed, and it is making a difference. I mean, certainly I doubt very much that I could have done the work that I've done without the whistleblower testimony.
Well, I'm sure that is true, and of course, I think the Internet has a huge part in that, playing a huge part in that. It makes it a little easier for people to research and put these pieces together, where before they just kind of laid out there in alternative radio and television shows and maybe articles. So it's kind of an interesting concept.
I think the Internet has been so important. I think the very fact that you can go onto the Internet now and just do a Google search on any particular topic associated with extraterrestrials and get a lot of information is really a very important advance. It means that this information is there and people can do research on it, put together articles or interviews or whatever it is based on that.
Yeah, I understand. You know, you of course, we're talking with Michael Sala here. Dr. Sala is an international, renowned expert on international politics, and we've been talking about the national implications, politics, and I've often wondered, how can somebody else, maybe in England or the European Union or somebody, hasn't taken it upon themselves to start this disclosure?
Well, I think what we have is a global system. I think what happened after the Second World War was that the victors realized that there was a lot of extraterrestrial involvement with Nazi Germany and during the war itself. And so they created a system that ensured that there'd be cooperation between the major powers in ensuring that this information doesn't get disclosed to their general public. And so you've had various national security agencies playing very similar roles of ensuring that all information concerning extraterrestrials, UFOs, and so forth was collected, was withdrawn from the public arena, and witnesses and so forth were intimidated into silence. And I think that was something that was pretty universal. I mean, it would vary from country to country, some countries being tougher, some countries being more relaxed. I think, for example, you could look at something like France, Britain, as being kind of pretty tough as far as whistleblowers or witnesses are concerned. But then you look at other countries like, say, Sweden, they might be more relaxed. But nevertheless, I think all the major powers played similar roles in ensuring that this information wasn't something that would be leaked to the general public. And the system has worked pretty well, so well that, in fact, I think now the people within the system probably are trying to push for some of this information to get out.
So you're saying some people actually inside the system would like to get more out, and they're getting impediments.
Well, I think they've been so successful that the general public has been so kind of put off by the kind of ridicule and the discrediting that goes on when it comes to anyone talking about extraterrestrials, that as far as the general public is concerned, it's something that you just don't take seriously. And so if the government does want to, say, get the public ready for disclosure...
In other words, we're victims of our own press. Yeah, right. I got what you're saying. Now, Dr. Sala has several other books available as well. He's written a great book on essays, a collection of essays, and over on our website, rather than get into it here on the radio, you can go to our website at jerrypippin.com, click on the UFO section, and we have a picture of Dr. Sala there, and you can click it on, and you can read all about about his bio and his books, and if you want to get some of them, most of those books are still in print, aren't they?
That's right, yes. I think aside from an early one I did on Islamic radicalism, they can all be ordered.
And before we get off the air, I want to get a couple of comments about that, because you are an expert in that field as well. But right now we're talking about the extraterrestrial presence and who's managing it and why with Dr. Michael Sala. This is probably an off-the-wall question, and you can tell me if it is, and we'll go on. But every time we talk about perhaps technology being borrowed from the ETs or whatever, it appears to me that Nazi Germany made a lot of technical strides there in World War II and right before it. I mean, were the ETs helping them?
Well, yes, there's a lot of evidence that the ETs were involved with Nazi Germany, that the Nazis did take the ET presence seriously, that Adolf Hitler, for example, committed a lot of the resources of the Nazi state to putting together whatever technologies that those that claim to be in communication with ET provided. So they also, for example, gave information about technologies being hidden in other parts of the planet, so Tibet, Antarctica, South America, Egypt, for example. So you had Nazi expeditions going to these different places. So the end result was that Nazi Germany did have some breakthroughs in getting access to the extraterrestrial technology, simply because they believed it. They believed the occult communications that various secret societies indulged in or initiated. So they took that seriously, and I think at the end of the Second World War, you had this realization by the Allied powers that a lot of the information that they had gotten through their intelligence services about developing technologies based on extraterrestrial communication, a lot of that was true, and I think they were probably shocked by what they saw.
You know, we're talking with Dr. Michael Sala, and right currently you're a researcher there on the Institute for Global Peace. I probably didn't get the title exactly, but it's part of American University, correct?
That's right. Yeah. American University in Washington, D.C. I'm in the Center for Global Peace and the School of International Service, and I currently have a research in residence.
Now, the reason I mentioned this is, you have quite a scholarly background, and people are welcome to read that. We could go on and on and on about it. How about other intellectuals and researchers and professors that you run across? Are you the odd duck believing in extraterrestrials, or is that more or less more common than we're led to believe?
Well, I think you have people within the academic institutions that believe in this, but they don't speak about it other than privately. But if you come out publicly, like I have, you'd run the risk of alienating the administrators, the people in charge, and that's what happened to me. Certainly have had some difficulty in terms of the administrators, dean or the head of departments and so forth, not being very supportive, and in fact being opposed to my linking his work in any way with the university. So I'm in this kind of very strange position of being officially linked with the university as a researcher in residence, but yet the research that I'm doing, they don't want to be associated with that in any way.
The reason I bring this up is because I want to get your opinion about this. I'm an outsider and not been involved in any of that at all, but I get the impression that probably this hands-off attitude is not necessarily because, Dr. Sala's way out there. And I think it's more like, he's going to impact our funding, perhaps. In other words, if you got some weird subjects here that they're afraid, I think it all gets back to funding.
Well, I think they are frightened about the effect of academics coming up with these types of theories and getting a lot of exposure and what happens to their departments. I mean, we're talking about very conservative institutions that are concerned about having the right number of student enrollments and having a certain number of grants coming in. And so if they have academics being associated with these sorts of topics that are ridiculed, well, then they see that as somehow undermining their status in the public, and so they're very concerned about that, and they will try to stop academics if they feel that they are treading into those.
The point I was making was that, you know, sometimes it appears things are not as they appear, and sometimes people may be against you in the, quote, the regular structure of academia, but secretly they're probably not opposed to you exploring these things other than they just don't want to hurt their funding or whatever. I mean, in other words, there's lots of other reasons out there, and that's one of the major problems I see with disclosure. Somebody start pushing, if they don't get everybody on the same page, he'll quickly be discounted, the person pushing for it.
Right, well, yes, I think that there are all sorts of reasons for why people don't support those proposing or supporting a disclosure process, but yeah, finances are definitely in there.
We are talking with Dr. Sala, and one of the things that I like is an interesting website that you have, and we have a link to that on our website as well, or if you want to go to it directly, folks, it's exopolitics.org. That's exopolitics.org. www, of course, in front. You certainly are not being held back in any way from anybody. You've put in some pretty interesting things.
Well, yes, I certainly have found that I haven't been opposed in terms of putting my material up on the website. I was able to do all of that without any outright kind of examples of interference. The only time I did find that I had some kind of censorship was when the book came out. The book came out at the same time as a Washington Post article that appeared, and that was focused on the 1954 Eisenhower ET meeting. And what happened was that the book was pulled out of the main database used by the big bookstores, Borders, Books, Barnes & Nobles, Amazon.com, and so forth. So it meant that people that would have gone into the bookstores wanting to order my book would have been told that, well, there's no record of it, and so as far as they know, it's something that can't be ordered. So that was certainly a form of what I call self-censorship, or what the publisher, Carol Adler from Dandelion Books, describes as being the way in which the people within the system exercise self-censorship of books that some way threaten their interest.
Yeah, I just spent an interesting Sunday afternoon with Grant Cameron, and we were talking about the Eisenhower incident in 1954, and kind of like to get your take on it. You're pretty sure it actually happened.
Well, yes. I think with all the evidence put together, it's pretty compelling that something did happen, that Eisenhower is on the record for having been in Palm Springs on February 20, 1951, that he did go missing on that evening. There was a concocted census story created to account for where he was. And there were all sorts of whistleblower reports about Eisenhower being at Edwards Air Force Base and seeing the motorcade enter into the Air Force. And then you have the actual testimonies of people describing the meeting that Eisenhower had with ET. And the thing that I find to be compelling about this meeting having occurred on February 20th, was that It happened just before a hydrogen bomb test at Bikini Atoll. That test occurred on March 1st of 1954, and it was the largest hydrogen bomb test in U.S. history. It was 15 megatons. And to me, that gave a rationale for why this meeting happened. Clearly, the extraterrestrials that Eisenhower met with wanted that testing program to be stopped. And it made sense that, well, if you're an advanced race of beings using some kind of interdimensional time-space travel and disruptions in that time-space field can harm you and harm other worlds, and that these disruptions are linked to, say, hydrogen bomb tests, well, then I could understand why they would have made it important for Eisenhower to attend a meeting and to try and persuade the administration to stop the testing program.
Coming on, Eisenhower, of course, was, president of the United States at that time, representative of the free world. Who represented the extraterrestrials, you think? I mean, it had to be somebody of comparable stature, I would think.
Well, I don't have that much information on exactly what rank they were. Presumably, they were of sufficient rank to represent a delegation of extraterrestrials. Apparently, there were five ships that landed. The ETs met with Eisenhower and with his national security team. And I've heard from other sources that I can't confirm that these were, in fact, from a group of worlds from the Liara and Tau Ceti system, star system, and that they were part of what is commonly referred to as a galactic federation, and that the visitors were humanoid, were Nordic looking, so they looked pretty much like tall Swedes, that Northern European look, and that they asked that the administration put an end to its nuclear weapons program and basically develop the kind of consciousness of the planet, or the morality of the planet, so that they could be ready to use the advanced technologies that extraterrestrials had. But I think the administration decided that, well, that wasn't sufficient.
It's pretty incredible that they would dismiss that.
Well, I think if you look at it from the perspective of the national security people at the time, I mean, it's just not that long ago come out of a major war. You have extraterrestrials appearing. You're not sure of who they are, where they're from, and what their motivations are. You have a Cold War. You've got your most powerful weapon being developed, and these extraterrestrials suddenly show up and say, well, we think that you as a species are rather immature for these very dangerous technologies, so we recommend that you give them up. Basically stop your testing of these thermonuclear weapons and develop your consciousness. It will help you develop your spiritual consciousness, and eventually we'll give you technology. So I think that the national security people would have been very suspicious of this. They would have thought, well, maybe the ETs are trying to get us to give away our weapons so that we can then be easy meat for them. But of course, that's a rather ridiculous argument when you think about it, because they could easily have taken over many, many decades or centuries before. That was what their aim was. But of course, for the national security people, they would have been suspicious, and I think their mindset was such that they would have been attracted to a kind of military defense, no matter how inane.
Well, and one thing, you got a good point there. One thing we forget at that time frame wasn't too much earlier, in 52, obviously, something happened over Washington, D.C. and in that area where military jets were actually shot down or crashed or something and chasing flying saucers, UFOs. So I could understand the military mindset.
Yes, I think they definitely have a culture in terms of being very cautious when it comes to giving up your weapons. In fact, they would be much more clients developing new weapon systems to deal with advanced extraterrestrial cultures, simply because they look at it all as a kind of new threat, and so they need to develop new technologies to deal with this potential threat.
We're talking with Dr. Michael Sala, and one of the things I have to talk to you about before we get off the air here is Philip Baruch. Is that the way of passing name, or Baruch? Or?
Daniel Baruch?
Yeah, Daniel, not Philip. Sorry about that. Yeah, you wrote an article about him. You might tell the audience a little bit about that. That's a fascinating thing.
Yes, it certainly is a very fascinating case. Daniel Baruch.
When we're talking with Philip, we're talking. Sorry about that. I got Philip on my mind. We're talking about this fellow who is actually giving you independent verification of something that Bill Hamilton's talked about before. You're also talking about that, and his evidently he was there. And J. Rod, is that did that happen up in Area 51?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. And I think Hamilton told me at one time that he was told that J-Rod was a good impressionist.
Well,
have you heard that?
I have heard that, that J-Rod was a being that could do many things and someone who had this incredible knowledge. That passed on to Baruch as far as cell technology is concerned.
Whatever happened on this, it was obviously a big move to shut him up.
Well, as far as Dan Baruch is concerned, I mean, what we've had is this very strange phenomenon where an acknowledged insider working on an existing black project, which described as Project Lotus, is giving interviews to outsiders, and that information concerns some of the kind of most prized jewels of the kind of covert world of black projects dealing with extraterrestrials. So it was clear to me that what we were seeing was a deliberate leak of information, that Baruch was being used to disclose information that would give me the impression that what we have here is a disclosure process. And so you had an interview that Baruch gave to two individuals, one running on an alternative presidential ticket. I can't remember his full name, but Sterling, Alan Sterling, I believe. And that he, well, in this interview, Dan Baruch basically said that he would be willing to participate in a congressional hearing talking about his role in the black project and also about the extraterrestrial presence that was hidden. So basically here you have an insider working on an existing black operation saying to two outsiders that yes, he would be willing to appear before Congress. So, I mean, when I saw that article or the news release concerning that meeting, what I recognized was that this was really a pretty blatant attempt to promote a disclosure process that would use whatever Daniel Baruch knew to promote an agenda that those within the system thought would benefit them in some way. So that's what my article responded to.
And, of course, that is your field, exopolitics, and it's a growing field, and we have this conference coming up over the weekend about it. What do you know about J-Rod? I mean, is he still here? Is he gone? Or do you have any idea? Or did he ever exist? I mean, you know.
Well, certainly Area 51 is known for having hosted various extraterrestrial beings, those that either have been apprehended after ships have crashed, or those that have been part of a set of agreements that have been reached between the national security system and the visiting extraterrestrials. So I don't recall exactly how J-Rod ended up at Area 51, whether it was because of a crash or whether it was because he was part of an agreement. But nevertheless, he was there and interacted with a number of individuals and apparently formed a very strong relationship with Dan Baruch, which led to Baruch having some very exclusive information that we're told is really critical for a top secret project by the name of Lotus to be successful for a possible contingency that lies in the future.
Now you've alluded to Lotus a couple of times. What do we know about that for sure?
Well, we know what Dan Burrish has described. We know that it hinges around a particular particle called the Ganesh particle, something to do with the origins of life. We know, according to some of the researchers that Burrish has worked with, for example, B.J. Wolf, that this particle was something that was being researched by some of the PhD postdoctoral candidates in various universities in terms of library searches. So there was definitely something to this Project Lotus, and Burrish really was the person that was giving us most information about it. And a lot of the information is certainly not something that I could comment on in any authoritative way, because it really does involve a kind of microbiologist being able to go through what Burrish has talked about and verify how true it was. But certainly many people believe that the work that Burrish was doing on Project Lotus was groundbreaking, and really did have incredible potential for changing life on our planet. And a lot of interest.
So basically, Dr. Sala, you're saying that Burrish, he had given indications before that he wanted more disclosure. Either it was either a setup, or maybe he was a rogue. One of the two, we're not sure. But you're inclined to believe that it was a planned event.
Well, I believe that Burrish is himself a very sincere individual who's committed to disclosure, and I know he wrote a book on the artifacts on Mars. I think the title was The Inca City on Mars, with B.J. Wolf, where he gave a lot of information about the artifacts there. So I think his personal motivation is very sincere, and he does genuinely want to get this information out, and I think people feel that in him, that he's a very highly motivated, principled individual that's very religious and sees that this information is really essential for helping humanity deal with whatever conditions lie in the future. What I see as a kind of exopolitical researcher is that the way in which the Burrish information is being handed out or managed by the extraterrestrial, well, by the Committee of the Majority, which runs the Black Project, the way that information is being leaked out and controlled and managed suggests that they are using Burrish to further their own agenda, which is certainly not consistent with what I think Burrish had in mind.
Just the plot thickens, I guess, and that's the way it's been for some time in this, and you obviously have been involved in the study of this whole political ramifications of it, not only from a national angle, but an international scholar as well. You wrote the book about the Muslim situation. Does that play into the UFO area at all, or is this something totally different? I mean, what's going on there exactly with the fundamentalists?
Sure. Well, there's definitely a link there in all of this. I mean, I think that international politics really does have a set of underlying forces that's propelling it. And as I've been doing my research, what I've been able to find is that I could understand phenomena using the knowledge I had from the extraterrestrial presence. The research I've done there could give me information that would explain conflicts. That, for example, when it comes to the Muslim world, we have the situation concerning Iraq, where Iraq became a target for the Bush administration, and not only for the first Gulf War, but also the second Gulf War, we have two administrations being focused on Iraq. And so when I look at Iraq, you see the whole set of forces underneath that that, you know, that you're dealing with extraterrestrial extraterrestrial artifacts that are left buried there in Iraq. Muslim fundamentalism, I believe that was something that was deliberately fostered by national security agencies that specialize in extraterrestrial management to destabilize countries like Iraq so that they could get a toehold in Iraq. But I think that the emergence of Iran, for example, was something that was orchestrated by these military intelligence organizations so that Islamic fundamentalism could be a threat to stability in that region, and with that threat, with the instability that was caused by that, these agencies hoped that they would benefit by getting a toehold in countries like Iraq, where they knew that there were very old sites with extraterrestrial technologies buried there. So I think that Muslim fundamentalism was something that was fostered by these organizations.
Now, you're not the first person I've heard talk about these treasures in Iraq and Iran and the Middle East, buried, and they may be ancient technologies. It seems to me when you're dropping, these million-dollar missiles that have penetration ability to go in and look for underground sanctuaries, it almost appears we're trying to destroy this stuff on purpose.
Well, a lot of this stuff is buried very deep. Apparently, the underground infrastructure that was developed by extraterrestrials is over a mile or 2 miles beneath the Earth's surface. So we're talking about technology that's hidden in locations that really is pretty far removed from the kind of underground bunkers that are built by, say, most third world dictators. We're talking about technologies that are hidden in these sites that themselves are quite ancient. And I think that's really what was driving the U.S. in getting into Iraq as quickly as it could, that the Bush administration felt that it was important for them to get control on the ground so that they could find out exactly what was in Iraq and what was in the pipeline there.
Now, you know, there's history going back, and there's a strange story there about the museum being looted, and people seem to have know exactly what they wanted, and seem to have a key to the place. There's a lot of intrigue going on there, so there is some credence for what you're saying. What kind of thing do you think we could find, or we would hope to find, that's buried a mile or two below?
Well, I think there's probably a whole host of extraterrestrial technologies that they would have been interested in. But I believe that it may have been the fear that some kind of time portal or some kind of interdimensional device may have existed in Iraq, which could have facilitated the entry of an off-world race of beings that would have caused chaos on the planet if they had gained access through Iraq. I think that may have been one of the factors that drove the managers of the extraterrestrial projects to get the Bush administration to go into Iraq, because there was a fear about what exactly Iraq's role would be as these technologies became activated or could be activated by external events.
Well, now you lead up to the question, the extraterrestrials, are the good guys or bad guys? That's kind of or they're both, or it's everything relative?
Well, I think that they are very varied. I think that their motivations, the activities that they pursue, are as varied as humans. That we see humanity indulging in both some very barbaric practices. I mean, they're still killing seals, baby seals in Canada, for example, and also doing some quite altruistic actions. And I think you would find the same thing with extraterrestrials. I think that there's really evidence supporting both the thesis that extraterrestrials are very benign, advanced, and wanting to assist humanity with its development and with its spiritual consciousness. And on the other hand, evidence that there are some very dark and sinister extraterrestrial groups that are trying to destabilize and exploit and really create havoc on the planet. So I think we have evidence for both.
It's interesting that you bring that up. That brings me back to my question about the Nazi technology. I mean, you know, how involved do these extraterrestrials have human allies? How involved is the human race?
Well, I think they definitely have human allies. Maybe it would be better to use the term human assets. I mean, assets of things that extraterrestrials can gain merely by implanting technologies or mind control programming in people's minds, so that basically what you have is someone who can be switched on in a way that would help a particular extraterrestrial group for any particular project that they have in mind. So they definitely have human assets that they can use, and I think that's one of their strategies. Those extraterrestrials that are intent on destabilizing the planet, one of their strategies is to give advanced technologies to unstable regimes. And so the Nazi regime was very unstable. I mean, Hitler was certainly not someone that was well respected in the international community. And so the extraterrestrials that were involved with him basically fed him this technology that led to him almost being able to win the war. So we have an example there of how these negative extraterrestrials can destabilize a planet simply by giving assistance to rogue regimes. And that may explain why the Bush administration is so intent on removing rogue regimes, because they see that, well, these can be exploited, and with these powerful extraterrestrial technologies, the last thing they would want is for someone like Kim Il-sung in North Korea to be able to use some kind of interdimensional technology to put a nuclear bomb in the White House.
Now, do you think the Bush administration, the neoconservatives, have something going on? And I mean, do they know more about this extraterrestrial presence and they're letting on? I mean, it seems to me that the underlying thing in our conversation here, Dr. Sally, is that a lot of people in government and high places know about a threat that most Americans are not even, they don't have the ability to comprehend.
Well, that's right. I think that the key people in the Bush administration, we're talking about Dick Cheney, Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, also George Tenet, that these people are given information by the managers of the extraterrestrial projects, given information that leads them to making certain policy decisions, such as there's a need to get into Iraq as quickly as possible and secure control of Iraq. They may not be fed all of the information. I don't think that you would have people like Cheney, Rumsfeld knowing everything about the extraterrestrial project, but they're probably given just enough information to reach the policy conclusions that would be consistent with the overall agenda of the managers of the extraterrestrial project. So, you know, I think it's kind of like they're pulling the strings.
Well, our time is almost up here. Overall, are you positive or negative about the future here with the extraterrestrials? Obviously, I hesitate to say pulling us like puppets on a string, but sometimes it appears that way.
Well, definitely, I think that the best way for anyone to deal with all of this is to do as much research as possible, to really go out there, read the literature, become familiar with all of the various nuances in this field, because it's very complex. It's certainly not an easy field. Once you begin to appreciate the complexity and the nuances, then I think people need to start looking at doing things such as courses. For example, I do a course on exopolitics, and it's an online course, so people can do things like that. do a course on exopolitics, or just go out and read as much of the information as they can, so they become familiar with it and talk.
They can find out about that course through your website, I take it.
That's right. Yes, they can just go to that website, exopolitics.org, that you spelled out earlier, and then they can see a little bit about the course, and they can enroll. And I think it really is. That's the best solution. As people become aware, as they know information, as they're comfortable talking about these things of positive extraterrestrials, negative extraterrestrials, as people become more comfortable and aware of all of that, then I think that helps the disclosure process move forward.
You know, from our conversation today, I get the impression that you feel, and maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, and I am, you tell me, and you feel that the political powers that be on both sides of the political spectrum all are talking about everything except the elephant in the room, which is the UFO presence.
Yes, they're definitely following a pattern.